Especially they are anti-women. Three times they beat the journals inside of the parliament. And recently, media is telling that five members of parliament, they are thieves, that before they were minister. And right now, one is Kanuni, who is head of the parliament, and he stole $25 million when he was minister of education.
We're going to have to leave it there. Malalai's website is malalaijoya.com. That's MalalaiJoya.com. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I want to thank you for being with us. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Doug Deuce, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Aaron Maté, Angela Kamat. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, where it's actually WUSB Stony Brook, to get technical. It's just about 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. You know, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have a long theme, because there's just so much that needs to be taken care of and fixed while I'm preparing here. It's, believe it or not, just to give you an idea, when you do radio, you normally hear yourself through headphones, and for some reason, that's not working today. It works if I lean on a particular button or knob really hard. Apparently, there's dirt or something inside, and if you touch it in just the right way, you'll hear your voice, which is important when you're doing a phone-in show. You have to be able to hear people and make sure things are on the air. But if you lean on it in the wrong way, or if you leave it in the wrong position, you hear nothing. And you don't even know if you're going out over the air. So it's very, very frustrating. And of course, the usual 95-degree temperature in here, boy. I'll tell you, you know, if I ever wind up in a comfortable radio studio, it's going to be so smooth. It really is. It's going to be amazing. You won't hear any of the rough patches. And maybe something will be lost, if that is the case. Maybe you need the rough patches. Maybe that's an essential part of life. Maybe that somehow makes it all the better, all the more valuable. And maybe it defines who you really are. But you know, I'd like to sort of try it the other way just once to see if that's the case. All right. Been a crazy week for me. Just all kinds of things. You have the my warm weather depression, which kicks in right when the weather starts getting warm. I don't know why. I talked about it before. It just happens all the time. And then I guess I've just been getting kind of fixated with two concepts that seem to drive not only this nation, but all those around me. Not all those around me. I don't want to be too unfair. But a lot of people that I see on a frequent basis, or a lot of people that I see casually passing in the street. I'm talking about the concepts of phoniness and hypocrisy, those things which I think are kind of the backbone, not only of America, just of our lives in this particular period of humanity. It just seems like we're always being overly polite to each other when we don't really mean to. We're being happy when we're not really happy. We're saying things we don't really mean. And most of the time, I can just sort of not pay attention to this. Tune it all out. But sometimes it just hits you, you know, and thank God I have a way of speaking, because I don't know what would happen otherwise. So many people keep things bottled up and they don't release. And that's when you have to worry. That's when you have some problems coming along. And speaking of problems, that leads us into today's news events, which we're going to try and not take too long on, because it's always depressing. It really is. Yeah, we should read happy news. We should read about puppies being saved and things like that, because that's what people want to hear. But then we'd be even more phony. Yeah, I'm not saying then we'd be phony, because I know we're phony too. We'd be even more phony if we did that, if we just focused on the good things and tuned out all the bad things. It's bad things happening. And we seem to have a talent for just ignoring it all, which only makes more bad things happen. It's so true. So true. Of course, the Middle East. Hey, who would have thought, you know, a year ago we were talking about having a Palestinian state as part of the solution. Actually, we've been talking about that for the last, 50 years or something? I don't know. It's been forever. But now, a new solution, two Palestinian states. Yes, that's right. One wasn't good enough. Now we have two. We've got the Hamas-led one and the Fatah-led one. And, oh my God, the whole thing is just... It's just gone so berserk. You thought it was as crazy as it could get. No, it can get a lot more crazy. It really can. Palestinians fighting each other now. And please don't tell me the Israelis aren't loving every minute of this. I mean, yeah, occasionally somebody says, hey, we forgot about those guys. Let's lob a missile over the border at them. And then they get back to fighting with each other and entertaining the entire world. It's so sad. It really is sad just to see people never learn and never advance past all sorts of ridiculous disputes, petty squabbles that turn into major wars. So, and a lot of people that I talk to, explain this to me, please. They have no idea about this. They don't know anything about what's going on over there. And it's not because it's not on the news. It is on the news. It's on the news in this country. It's on the news just about everywhere. It's because we're tuning it out. We're saying, this is bad. I don't want to hear about it anymore. Therefore, it does not exist. And while you have to do that to a certain degree to maintain some semblance of sanity, if you tune it out completely, then basically anything can happen, and it's okay with you, because you won't say a word against it, because you don't know about it. So, yeah, that's why we have to focus sometime on the bad things of the world, because, well, first of all, it allows you a chance to express your ideas. This is a call-in show, and many of you have done that in the past, and hopefully we'll continue to do so. We can add new perspective, maybe even come up with an idea to fix the whole thing, and be listened to. Yeah, that's not going to happen, I know, but it's something anyway. I just think we have a lot more of a chance if we know what's going on than if we don't know what's going on, because you can believe there are people out there who will always know what's going on, and they're the ones controlling things. They're the ones making it worse. The people who make it worse, they aren't the ones burying their heads in the sand. They're the ones right out there manipulating things. Got to keep an eye on them. All right, let's look at the cheery situation in Iraq first. You remember, at the beginning of the year, it was all about, we just need one more push. We just need to throw some more troops in there, and then we'll really start to see some progress. And the Democrats were all like, well, you know, this has gone on far too long as it is. And yeah, well, we said we were all for war when it all started and when it counted. Now that elections are coming up, we're not really that much for it anymore. So why don't you stop that? Why don't you stop the war? Let's bring all the troops home. And they kind of didn't keep up with that position for very long. They said, okay, we can send more troops in, but we're going to hold up funding. We're going to fight about the funding so that this doesn't go on forever. And then when they got into a battle about that, they said, okay, we won't hold up the funding. You can have the funding as long as you meet a certain series of benchmarks to show the progress in Iraq. And those benchmarks, if you don't meet those benchmarks, you'll have penalties. And because we don't want to be too hardline, we'll allow President Bush to decide whether or not there are going to be any penalties for not meeting the benchmarks. It's incredible. It's incredible, these spineless people that are out there. They are so afraid of, I don't know what they're afraid of now, because we already know they're spineless. I imagine they're afraid that they're totally misgauging the American perception out there. That they're going to come down hard on the idiots who got us into this thing. And somehow the American public will backlash against that and say, how dare you? How dare you criticize our leaders? So they're afraid to take that step. That real step to say, yeah, you know what? Guys in power, Bush, Republicans, all you, you don't know what you're doing. It's time for you to leave. It's time for somebody to actually take a stand here. They're afraid to do that. They will not do that. I think they'll be afraid to do that even if they take power in 2008. I know certainly Clinton was. When he was in power, he was so afraid of offending anybody on the right. The religious right, the neoconservatives, you name it. Can't offend these people. I have no trouble offending these people. I enjoy it. And this is part of what I'm speaking about as far as phoniness. We all know these people don't agree with each other. So let's just drop the pretense and get on with the arguing and debating and not caving in all the time. Because things in Iraq are getting worse. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know this. In fact, I don't really see how being a rocket scientist would help you know this. But the point is, anybody can figure this out. Anybody. Today, just today, I won't go back too far, it just gets too depressing, but today, 75 people killed in a massive explosion in Baghdad. 75 people. Last week, you had a sacred shrine, I believe it was a Shia shrine, was it? And then, in retaliation for that being destroyed, a bunch of Sunni mosques were destroyed as well. So, you've got that nonsense going on. Last time this happened, it turned into a whole big mess with all kinds of people getting killed. Now, basically, they're just destroying the buildings, which for some reason over there, that's more of an offense than killing a whole lot of people. That goes to the whole religion thing. Oh, yeah, okay, you killed 1,000 of our people. Let bygones be bygones. But, hey, you desecrated our church. You must die. Give me a break. talk about misplaced values. But you know what? It's their misplaced values. It's on them. Of course, we've messed up the whole situation by getting in there in the first place, but a lot of that was based on, yeah, you know, we're Americans, we can make it right. We can go over there and teach them about democracy and make them just like us, or at least like people that we'll be comfortable sitting on an airplane with. And that's our big mistake, thinking that we can fix everything. Obviously, we can't. Obviously, every time we backtrack, stop arguing, give in, every time we do that, it just makes things worse. So you have soldiers dying every single day, our soldiers dying. We have civilians over there dying every single day. Not getting any better. And the blood is on the hands of everybody. Everybody who supports this kind of thing, who doesn't back down, who allows it to keep happening. And also people don't pay attention because they make it so much easier. Just yesterday I read a story, this was actually on BBC that I saw this, where a whole bunch of kids got killed in Afghanistan because of an American airstrike. Did you hear about this? Yeah, but the way the story has been framed is pretty much as follows. Al-Qaeda strike has civilian victims. In other words, you have to put the word Al-Qaeda in there because then that sort of casts the blame onto Al-Qaeda for being there or for just existing any place. And then when we lob a few bombs and missiles at houses and kill a whole lot of innocent people, well, we had the best intentions. Because Al-Qaeda was there, or at least we thought Al-Qaeda was there. It wasn't our fault. Al-Qaeda. Say it a few times, and you can get away with anything. Okay, and then the Middle East situation. Yeah, you've got some really bad things going on over there. People fleeing, trying to get away from one part of the Palestinian territories to another, or even to Israel, which I guess is the ultimate irony. Hundreds of terrified Gazans. Might as well get used to that. It's probably going to be a country at some point. Hundreds of terrified Gazans. Was it Gazans? I don't even know how to say it yet. Fleeing Hamas rule were trapped at a main crossing with Israel on Tuesday, hoping to gain permission to pass through Israeli territory to sanctuary in the West Bank. For those of you who have not been following this, and I understand you're out there, and I'm not judging you, but come on already. There was basically an overthrow of the government in Gaza. The Palestinian territories are divided in half. Not really half. Gaza is much smaller than the West Bank. But you have two different factions. You have Hamas. Hamas, who were democratically elected. They were democratically elected. We may not like the results, but they were elected by the people. And I can't help but think that if we hadn't been so mule-headed about this, insofar as not even recognizing their government, not even speaking to them, maybe the situation wouldn't have spiraled so far out of control. After all, we've been pushing for democratic elections. Hey, they had one. They elected somebody we didn't like. So we stopped talking to them. We stopped even acknowledging their existence. Anyway, now you have a bad situation over there where all these people are fleeing the Gaza Strip, fearing death or persecution. And this is, of course, after Hamas militants wrested control of the coastal strip from Fatah security forces late last week. Now, Israel, which has no interest in letting masses of Gazans pass through its territory and possibly destabilize the quieter West Bank, has refused to let most of them move to maintain order. Israeli tanks, armored vehicles rolled up to the Palestinian side of the border on Tuesday, chasing away cars parked next to the tunnel, including vehicles belonging to journalists. We are imprisoned between two walls. They are firing at us from behind, said a bearded man in a tunnel between the two sides. We're calling on all Palestinian authorities to protect these people and children. Now, Hamas has declared a general amnesty for Fatah fighters shortly after it vanquished them in Gaza, but frightened civilians and security officers have not been reassured. On a Hamas website, a deck of cards showing four pictures of Fatah leaders was emblazoned across the homepage. Revenge is coming no matter what was written under the cards. You know, that kind of thing just doesn't instill you with confidence. that you're going to be safe if you go back. Abu Mustafa, a Fatah fighter who wanted to leave Gaza through that border, said he feared he was a marked man. They forgave people before and later killed them. There's no way we'll go back. And, you know, you look at this situation and you say, if only those evil Hamas people weren't in power, if the Fatah people were in power instead, things would be much better. Not really true. Not really true, because they're corrupt as hell. Money disappears as if it doesn't exist when you hand it over to them. And now we're handing money over to those people while the other democratically elected people are causing all kinds of other problems and have no money. Here's a piece. I'd like to share this piece with you because I came across this in my wanderings on the net. And this is from a journalist who writes for The Independent over in England. And I just don't think anyone has gotten it quite as accurately as this guy. And I ask for your indulgence here, for those of you who simply want to send the entire Middle East up into space, as I have suggested a few times, check back in a couple of centuries and see how they're doing, and if no better, send them back up. This kind of puts it all in perspective as to what's going on over there. There is a degree of fascination in it. There most certainly is. And there is no one side that gets it right. But this comes pretty close, I think. How troublesome the Muslims of the Middle East are. First, we demand that the Palestinians embrace democracy, and then they elect the wrong party, Hamas. And then Hamas wins a mini-civil war and presides over the Gaza Strip. And we Westerners still want to negotiate with the discredited president, Mahmoud Abbas. Today, Palestine, and let's keep those quotation marks in place, there were quotation marks around that, has two prime ministers. Welcome to the Middle East. Who can we negotiate with? To whom do we talk? Of course, we should have talked to Hamas months ago, but we didn't like the democratically elected government of the Palestinian people. They were supposed to have voted for Fatah and its corrupt leadership. But they voted for Hamas, which declines to recognize Israel or abide by the totally discredited Oslo Agreement. No one asked on our side which particular Hamas was supposed to recognize, the Israel of 1948, the Israel of the post-1967 borders, the Israel which builds and goes on building vast settlements for Jews and Jews only on Arab land, gobbling up even more of the 22% of Palestine still left to negotiate over. And so today we are supposed to talk to our faithful policeman, Mr. Abbas, the moderate, as the BBC, CNN, and Fox News refer to him, the moderate Palestinian leader, a man who wrote a 600-page book about Oslo without once mentioning the word occupation, who always referred to Israeli redeployment rather than withdrawal, a leader we can trust because he wears a tie and goes to the White House and says all the right things. The Palestinians didn't vote for Hamas because they wanted an Islamic Republic, which is how Hamas's bloody victory will be represented, but because they were tired of the corruption of Mr. Abbas's Fatah and the rotten nature of the Palestinian Authority. I recall years ago being summoned to the home of a PA official, Palestinian Authority, whose walls had just been punctured by an Israeli tank shell. What struck me were the gold-plated taps in his bathroom. Those taps, or variations of them, were what cost Fatah its election. Palestinians wanted an end to corruption, the cancer of the Arab world, and so they voted for Hamas, and thus we, the all-wise, all-good West, decided to sanction them and starve them and bully them for exercising their free vote. Maybe we should offer Palestine EU membership if it would vote for the right people. All over the Middle East, it is the same. We support Hamid Karzai in Afghanistan, even though he keeps warlords and drug barons in his government, and we really are sorry about all those innocent Afghans we are killing in our war on terror, like the ones a couple of days ago. We love Hosni Mubarak of Egypt, whose torturers have not yet finished with the Muslim Brotherhood politicians recently arrested outside Cairo, whose presidency received the warm support of Mrs., yes, Mrs. George W. Bush, and whose succession will almost certainly pass to his son, Gamal. Or is it Gamal? I think that's an L. We adore Muammar Gaddafi, the crazed dictator of Libya, whose werewolves have murdered his opponents abroad, whose plot to murder King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia preceded Tony Blair's recent visit to Tripoli. Colonel Gaddafi was called a statesman by Jack Straw for abandoning his non-existent nuclear ambitions, and whose democracy, also in quotes, is perfectly acceptable to us because he is on our side in the quote-unquote war on terror. Yes, and we love King Abdullah's unconstitutional monarchy in Jordan, and all the princes and emirs of the Gulf, especially those who are paid such vast bribes by our arms companies, that even Scotland Yard has to close down its investigations on the orders of our Prime Minister. And yes, I can indeed see why he doesn't like the Independent's coverage of what he quaintly calls the Middle East. If only the Arabs and the Iranians would support our kings and shahs and princes whose sons and daughters are educated at Oxford and Harvard, how much easier the Middle East would be to control. For it is about control, and that is why we hold out and withdraw favors from their leaders. Now Gaza belongs to Hamas. What will our own elected leaders do? Will our pontificators in the EU, the UN, Washington, and Moscow now have to talk to these wretched, ungrateful people, or will they have to acknowledge the West Bank version of Palestine, Abbas, the safe pair of hands, while ignoring the elected Hamas in Gaza? It's easy to call down a curse on both their houses, but that's what we say about the whole Middle East. No, those pesky Middle Easterners vote for the wrong people, support the wrong people, love the wrong people, don't behave like us civilized Westerners. So what will we do? How do we deal with a coup d'etat by an elected government? Well, that piece, which I just happened to stumble upon this weekend while perusing the net, was written by one Robert Fisk, who's a columnist for The Independent over in England. And I looked him up on Wikipedia. He's got quite a career behind him. He lives in Beirut, described by the New York Times as probably the most famous foreign correspondent in Britain. He has over 30 years of experience in international reporting. In the British journalistic tradition of the foreign correspondent, Robert Fisk has developed a personal analysis of the foreign affairs that he covers and presents them in that light, often with trenchant criticism of the British government and its allies. His admirers take this as a sign of his depth of knowledge. His critics take it as confirmation of his incorrigible bias. Fisk is a consistent critic of what he perceives as hypocrisy in British government foreign policy. There's that word again. Hypocrisy. It keeps coming back. Now, Osama bin Laden, you may remember him. And Adam Gadan, an alleged Al-Qaeda spokesman and translator of American birth. The guy, I think we've played him on the radio, he can't read to save his life, have apparently mentioned Robert Fisk in speeches. Osama bin Laden said Fisk's reporting was neutral. That's exactly the kind of endorsement you strive for. Get Osama bin Laden praising you. According to a report on September 2nd, 2006, in a videotaped statement, Adam Gadan said that Fisk and George Galloway have a respect and admiration for Islam, have sympathy for Muslims, their causes, quite sure what that means, and added, I say to them, isn't it time you stopped sitting on the fence and came over to the side of truth? During one of bin Laden's and Fisk's meetings, that's right, he's actually met him, Fisk noted an attempt by bin Laden to possibly recruit him. Bin Laden said, Mr. Robert, one of our brothers had a dream. He dreamed that you were a spiritual person. This means you are a true Muslim. And Fisk replied, Sheikh Osama, I am not a Muslim. I am a journalist. Amen. That's what journalism should be. Speaking out on what you see. And realizing that there actually is a good degree of bias in any journalism. People say that that journalists have to be completely objective, and it's impossible. It's completely impossible to actually believe this, because we are all biased in some way, and as soon as you recognize that, you can be a lot more honest. All right, that's it for the Middle East for today, unless somebody wants to call in and talk about it some more. What else is going on in the news? This story really annoyed me. You hear about this woman, Maria Cavallo, or Cavallo, is that how you pronounce it? let's say Cavallo. I think I like the way that sounds better. Maria Cavallo, clutching a photo of her son, she walks the streets of Tijuana, the sweltering streets of Tijuana, searching for the mentally disabled man she says was deported more than a month ago, despite being a U.S. citizen, and who has then disappeared in this chaotic border city. If you've ever been to Tijuana, that is indeed an apt description. It is chaotic. Cavallo says she has searched hospitals, shelters, and jails here looking for her 29-year-old son, Pedro Guzman of Lancaster, California, who was jailed for a misdemeanor trespassing violation, then sent to Mexico on May 11th. Guzman's relatives sued the Department of Homeland Security and the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department last week in federal court, claiming Guzman was a U.S. citizen and had been wrongfully deported and demanding that U.S. authorities help find him. I'm searching for him because he's my son, but it should be U.S. authorities searching for him. They made the mistake, not me. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement confirmed that Guzman had been deported and said the agency had done so correctly. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has no reason to believe that it improperly removed Pedro Guzman, according to an agency statement. Officials at the U.S. consulate in Tijuana say they have made calls to help search for Guzman and asked other consulates in Mexico if they have information. We are doing things to help that we are not obliged to do, said consulate spokeswoman Lorena Blanco. My God, what a bunch of jerks these people are. First of all, if you're looking for him, obviously you're looking for him because you realize that this guy shouldn't have been deported. I don't know what the statement means where they say that they don't believe they did anything wrong. They had no reason to believe they improperly removed him. The American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California says it has Guzman's birth certificate showing he was born at Los Angeles County USC Medical Center. No matter how you slice it, if that document exists, I don't think the ACLU is making this up. The guy's a citizen. No matter how Mexican he looks, no matter how mentally disabled he may be. Guzman can't read or write and has trouble processing information. His mother fears he could be an easy victim for robbers. The Sheriff's Department identified him as a non-citizen, obtained his signature for voluntary removal from the United States, and turned him over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a division of Homeland Security, for deportation. This is how they say that they don't think they did anything wrong, because they got him to sign a form that he didn't understand. And ICE, they got him transferred over by the Sheriff's Department, so they didn't do anything wrong. They just followed orders. But what strikes me is that they're still saying to this day, we're doing more than we're required to do. What a bunch of jerks. During a phone call to the family last week, Pedro Guzman said he had been deported and asked a passerby where he was. The family could hear the person respond, Tijuana. And that's all they have. That's all they have on where this guy is. It just goes to show you the arrogance with which those in authority can move. And why this isn't being reported everywhere is beyond me. I mean, I've seen it reported in a couple of places, but this should have as much coverage as any missing child. You know, someone who falls down a well, horrible story, people who are missing, abducted, whatever, this is important. And this is something that the authorities are responsible for, and they should be expending all efforts to find this guy while there's still time. Unbelievable. And here's a bit of good news, locally. I don't know why this is something we even had to come to. This is common sense. Police officers involved in shootings would face mandatory sobriety tests under new policies prompted by the killing last year of an unarmed man on his wedding day. We talked about this at length on this show, the Sean Bell slaying. Of course, you still have time to shoot people and be drunk. It doesn't start till September. Why don't they just start it right now? What kind of policy allows you to get away with this kind of thing, especially being undercover cops who have been hanging out in bars all night long, and yet we see no need to give them a breathalyzer test. Unbelievable. The measures are expected to make undercover operations the safest possible for the police and public alike, according to Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly. He said at least one other police department in Milwaukee issues the breath test to officers involved in certain shootings. Just one other in the country. This is not just a New York thing. Police have insisted there was no evidence that alcohol played a role in the decision of the police to open fire. In fact, a commander who spoke to one of the cops immediately after the shooting judged him fit for duty. Well, gee, I guess that settles that. Of course, there's no chance that this guy, the commander of the cop, that they're on the same side. There's no chance of that, is there, that one might cover for the other? No, of course not. These are cops. They're superhumans. It's unbelievable. So justice moves very, very slowly and in a very, very frustrating manner. And let's see, on the lighter side, a show of affection almost landed a teenage boy in detention in Vienna, Virginia. Hugging was 13-year-old Hal Bilyeu's crime when he sat next to his girlfriend at lunch, his girlfriend, a few months ago, and put his arm around her shoulder. He was let off with a warning. But the cost of a repeat offense could be detention. There's a rule, you see. And I'm sorry for those of you who are not in America. This is the kind of thing we have to deal with. There is a rule against physical contact at Kilmer Middle School. We've got to start the sentence again. Must be something about the way those words are together. A rule against physical contact at Kilmer Middle School. There you go. About 10 miles west of Washington is so strict. How strict is it? Students can be sent to the principal's office for hugging, holding hands, or even high-fiving. High-fiving, that'll get you suspended. Oh, it's about time, isn't it? High-fiving has always been a problem. What if you brush against somebody? What if someone is tripping and you catch them? My God, what a society we live in. Anyway, Hal, a seventh grader, said, "I think hugging is a good thing." We'll soon fix you, Hal. We'll soon get those notions out of your head. In this country, no, we don't think hugging is a good thing. Stay on your side of the street, we'll stay on ours. Continuing, "I put my arm around her. It was like for 15 seconds. I didn't think it would be a big deal." Welcome to the 21st century, Hal. Unlike some schools which ban fighting or inappropriate touching, Kilmer Middle School bans all touching. But that doesn't seem necessary to Hal and his parents. They've sent a letter asking the county school board to review the rule. But at a school of 1,100 students that was meant to accommodate 850, school officials think touching can turn into a big deal. They've seen pokes lead to fights, gang signs in the form of handshakes. and girls who are uncomfortable being hugged but embarrassed to say anything. Hey, you know, these are all problems. But those are the problems. Kilmer Principal Deborah Hernandez, another one of our resident geniuses, said, "You get into shades of gray. The kids say, if he can high five, then I can do this." And I guess this meaning, what, kill somebody, I suppose. Hernandez said, "The no-touching rule is meant to ensure that students are comfortable and that crowded hallways and lunchrooms stay safe." She said school officials are allowed to use their judgment in enforcing the rule. Typically, only repeat offenders are reprimanded. So if you're hugging too much, you may not finish your middle school career down there in Virginia. Incredible. All right. But are they being phony? Are they being hypocritical? No, I think they're just being stupid. I think they're just being real morons down there. Let's take a quick look at some of the letters that have been written over the past week or so. Unless I don't have them. I'm looking for them now and I don't see them. Are they over there? Don't worry, there's plenty of other material if we don't have the letters. I could have sworn I had these with me. My goodness. No, I don't have letters. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for those of you who have written letters to us. But somehow they have disappeared. Let me look in the envelope. No, they're not in there. They fall on the floor? We have a fan going, so they could have been blown away. It's too bad. There were some good letters. Oh, I'm really sorry about that. We'll read them next week. But, of course, next week there'll be more letters, so it's going to be a bit of a challenge to squeeze them all in. Our phone number, might as well give out the phone number, is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Don't you just hate it when you lose things and you don't know how you did it? All right. Well, there's plenty more to focus on. For some reason, I have two copies of these fun facts, which I wasn't even going to read. Stupid fun facts. Like this. There are only four words in the English language which end in D-O-U-S. Tremendous, horrendous, stupendous, and hazardous. Why do you need to know that? Or tigers have striped skin, not just striped fur. Or Donald Duck's middle name is Fauntleroy. Okay, you know, that's enough. It's just, the whole thing is silly. Far more important is this story coming from, of all places, or of all entities, McDonald's. Yeah, you've heard of them. Apparently, they don't have enough control. They need to control the language now. The English language is getting out of control, and they have to rein it in a little bit. The late Austrian philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein once said the meaning of a word was derived from the way it is used in language. Not according to McDonald's. The fast food giant is currently lobbying dictionary publishers to change the meaning of the word McJob or remove it altogether on the grounds that it denigrates the company's employees. Yeah, in 2001, the term finally entered the Oxford English Dictionary, which defined it as an unstimulating, low-paid job with few prospects, especially one created by the expansion of the service sector. And it has remained there ever since. But not for much longer if McDonald's gets its way. The company is leading a word battle on behalf of the wider service sector. The object, according to David Fairhurst, the senior vice president of McDonald's, is to change the definition of McJob to reflect a job that is stimulating, rewarding, and offers skills that last a lifetime. Yeah. Okay, we have Merriam-Webster up on the computer here. I'm going to enter the word McJob and see if it shows up there. Okay, I spelled it right. M-C-J-O-B. What do we got? We have a slow connection. That's what we got. Here it is. A low-paying job that requires little skill and provides little opportunity for advancement. Hey, can we actually do this? This would make me so happy. Can we actually play the audio?
McJob.
Okay, there it is. Let me hear that again. Is that too much for the computer to do?
McJob.
There we go. Thank you so much. McJob. So that's how you say it. McJob. You kind of have to have a sneer in your voice. Oh, my God. Well, let's keep an eye on that battle. See if they're victorious. 631-632-9872. I see we had some phone calls, and they all disappeared. And they didn't try again. So I'll give you a couple of moments. Then we're going to get into some other stories here at the radio station here, such as the Ten Commandments of Driving that the Vatican has issued today. It must be slow over there. The driver's Ten Commandments. Number one, you shall not kill. Number two, the road shall be for you a means of communion between people and not of mortal harm. Number three, courtesy, uprightness, and prudence will help you deal with unforeseen events. Number four, be charitable and help your neighbors in need, or neighbor in need, rather, especially victims of accidents. Number five, cars shall not be for you an expression of power and domination and an occasion of sin. What in God's name are they talking about? An occasion of sin in a car. Oh, wait a minute, I think I might know. Number six, charitably convince the young and not so young not to drive when they are not in a fitting condition to do so. How about convincing everybody not to drive unless they really have to? That'd be kind of nice, wouldn't it? Number seven, support the families of accident victims. Sounds fair enough. Number eight, bring guilty motorists and their victims together at the appropriate time so that they can undergo the liberating experience of forgiveness. You know, you might want to check with the victims first to make sure that's what they want to do. Sometimes doesn't help. Number 9, on the road, protect the more vulnerable party. I'm not sure how, I guess that means don't run over bicyclists or pedestrians or even animals on the street. How far do you go to protect innocent creatures on the road? Would you risk an accident to avoid hitting a raccoon? I have, but it's more an instinct. It's not, I'm thinking, yeah, that raccoon really deserves to live, and I've had enough. I'm willing to risk my life to ensure that raccoon crosses the road safely, or continues to sit in the middle of the road safely, which seems to be what he's doing. Sometimes instinct kicks in, and it's not always the right thing. Finally, number 10, feel responsible toward others. The 10 commandments of driving that the Vatican saw fit to release today. In these troubled times, this is the most important thing they've got on their minds. Okay. Well, I don't see the calls coming back in, so we're going to continue to some other matters. Boy, I really wish I had those letters. But there are plenty of other things to look at. Okay, I was talking about the world of insincerity and hypocrisy and phoniness. You know, if you look up the word phoniness on the internet, I just decided to do this right before I came in because it was bugging me. For some reason, there are more hits with Catcher in the Rye than anything else in the world. It's like the book Catcher in the Rye has some kind of exclusive right to the word phoniness. And it just strikes me as, you know, our whole society is based on being phony. It really is. Now you're too late. Calls are coming in now, too late. I said I'm on to something else now. I'm on a roll. We are in the middle of this amazing culture that just basically deals with phoniness as its reason for being. I mean, whether people tell you to have a nice day when they don't really mean it, you know, that's phoniness. But you'd have to be kind of a jerk to criticize that. That's just a symptom of the real problem. I'm talking about people who act one way when they really don't believe in what they're saying, when they pretend that you're their friend when you're not, when they say, yes, we'll do lunch when they have no intention of doing so, when they express an interest in your life when they don't care and they're sorry they ever met you in the street to start with. That's what I'm talking about as far as phoniness and insincerity and hypocrisy, yes. Here's the cool thing about the net when you start looking into things like this. You get to see all these different papers written on the subject, and people have written all sorts of things on phoniness. Now, this is, I guess, a class paper somebody left lying around on the internet. It's on the internet, so it's fair game. An issue for us today, as it was for Holden Caulfield, the protagonist in The Catcher in the Rye, is recognizing what is phony and what is not. The word phony is used many times by Holden. In fact, the book is full of this word usage, which really touches upon a deeper meaning than is first seen. On one level, we see a young boy, Holden Caulfield, confused about life and cutting down things that exist around him. But on a deeper level, we find that we are really reading a story about a boy's struggle with adolescence and his transition into adulthood. Holden is a very perceptive boy. He is almost beyond his years in his ability to recognize what he sees around him. But he is still just a boy, so his thoughts on life are simple. Either something is good or bad, true or false, real or phony. When Holden uses the word phony, he seems to be describing people that are prejudiced, hypocrites, or insincere. It seems to be a way for Holden to justify how the world is a bad place, and to grow up and leave adolescence behind is a very bad thing. Actually, typo here, whoever wrote this paper, you want the word adolescence that ends in CE, not TS. You're saying leave the actual adolescence behind. No, that's not what you meant. By the end of the book, however, Holden changes his view, or this view about growing up. Phoniness exists in our society today just as it does in the book. When someone wears expensive clothes to school or drives a really fancy car, they can be called phony. if a person talks with a made-up accent, as Faith Cavendish did when Holden calls her on the phone once he arrives in New York City, they can sound phony. We live today in a world of materialism, and when someone tries to make this search for expensive things important, they're acting superficial and phony. I don't know if I agree. They might really be into that kind of thing. I mean, they're rather transparent, they're rather superficial. But phoniness, here's an example of phoniness. I know a fair number of people, I'm not going to say who, obviously, I value my existence, but I know a fair number of people who are defined, they define themselves as countercultural. They go against the grain. They're rebels. Individuals, if you will. And a lot of time is spent criticizing the mainstream around them, in many ways, the way I do. Oh, and by the way, I know I'm a hypocrite too, so don't bother sending me the letters saying that, Emmanuel, you were hypocritical at this particular moment. I know, probably about 18 times in the last 10 minutes alone. We're all hypocrites. We're all phony to some degree. But I think it's gotten out of hand as being acceptable. You know, where you say one thing to one group of people and something else to someone in a different position, and that's seen as normal. That's seen as okay, acceptable. These countercultural people who basically criticize anything that's in the mainstream are the same people that if someone else comes along that they want to impress, they're up to date on all the latest fashion. They're up to date on all the latest movies, who the actors are, the trivia in their lives, the things that don't matter at all. And that's one thing I don't think I'm a hypocrite with, because I really don't care. I mean, I enjoy doing mainstream things. I'm not one of these people who believes in not having fun and staying inside and just criticizing everything and boycotting as many things as possible. I'll occasionally do things that I don't agree with. But one thing I do not do is keep track of who's dating whom and what this actress's birthday is. If I saw Paris Hilton walking down the street, I wouldn't recognize her. I would not. And I wouldn't care either. So it's one thing to say you don't care. It's one thing to really not care. And that's where I call phoniness. All right, here's another website that had a poll. Are we more, less, or the same amount of phony as when The Catcher in the Rye came out? Again, Catcher in the Rye has the exclusive on the word. Less phony, 6% of the people. As phony, 46% of the people. And we are phonier today than in The Catcher in the Rye. 46% of the people agreed with that statement. Here are some examples. Another class project by either a teacher or professor. I'm not going to give out the details. But basically the assignment was this. In class, you discussed Sally and her young man in Chapter 17. As a small group, you wrote Holden's definition of phony. Now, write a 2-3-paragraph description of a phony that you know, have seen, or have read about. Create a pseudonym to protect the person's identity, but include specific examples that show the person's mannerisms, actions, how he or she speaks and interacts with others, and what he or she looks like. What makes him or her a phony? Oh, here's one completed assignment. I once knew this guy who thought he knew everything. He was younger than me and always trying to show off. Aha, why is his being younger than you important? Are you judging him because of his age? Anyway, he had this really fake voice. It sounded like one of those voices of an actor who acts in the child TV shows like Blue's Clues. I'm sort of exaggerating, but it was really annoying to listen to him speak. I felt bad for him because nobody else liked him and they were always picking on him because of the phony way he acted. I tried to help him a couple of times, but it was already too late. He had stereotyped everyone in life as evil bullies. And just before that, you said nobody else liked him and they were always picking on him, and somehow he categorized everybody as evil bullies. Okay, this person would cry just to get attention from time to time, since it was the only way he could get others to look at him. Now, if you're being bullied by everybody, wouldn't you want to not have people looking at you? I'm sorry to tear apart your assignment here, but I just don't think you're getting a phony person with this description. Anyway, the last time I tried helping him was when I asked him what he had for lunch. He just began to cry and got me in trouble with a teacher because the teacher thought I was picking on him. After that, I never helped him again since I did not want to get in trouble. He left the school 3 months later, and I feel kind of bad for the kid now that he's gone. Well, maybe he went on to a better place. I don't know. It didn't sound like that was exactly heaven. Here's another response to the assignment. Most of the people I know are not phonies, but there is this one person that I can most definitely say that he is a phony. I won't reveal the person's name, but I'll call him Congo. Interesting choice of anonymous names. Congo is someone who takes steroids to do track and field. He is really good at it, but now he thinks he's not good unless he intakes these steroids. He is also a heavy smoker, but he coughs and chokes when he does. He just does it to show his friends that he smokes because he will never smoke unless someone that he wants to impress is close to him. Mm-hmm. I think these are two very phony acts because you don't need steroids to prove you are a great runner. You know, you don't need cigarettes if you want to be a great runner. That's the real lesson here. Okay, well, that's I don't know, these answers to the assignments, they're not really pointing out the phoniest of all people out there. How about this one? I think there are a lot of phony people out there which try to be something that they are not, or they try to like the people that they are surrounded by. Sometimes people can get really annoying by trying to be someone else. Amen, I hear that. There was this girl some years ago. She had very light-colored skin, but she thought she was Tupac. She really thought she was like a gangster or something, or the last Coca-Cola of the desert. Wow. The last Coca-Cola of the desert. I've never heard that phrase before. Okay, that's a good one. I know a phony that lives in Venezuela, and he thinks that he is the best in everything. You know, you're describing an egotist, really. An incident I had with this phony was that we were playing soccer, and I didn't score a goal, so he was telling me that I couldn't play soccer and stuff like that. I don't like this phony because he is always thinking that he is doing everything good, and he thought that he was the best guy in the school. This phony is 16 years old, and he is big and fat. What makes this guy a phony is his way of thinking. I don't know. He seems to definitely have trouble with his appearance and things like that. Here's a good one. I've met lots of phonies, but you could also say that we ourselves are phonies. All of us have our certain rules of how people should be, how they should talk, how they should socialize overall. Although we may not admit that we are phonies, I guess you would have to look at the way we try to fit in and try to make new friends. Everyone has their own so-called cliques where people share things in common and relate to the same topics. A phony to Holden may be a person who may try to be sophisticated, smart, and to Holden, all those qualities represent fakeness. To me, a phony would be someone who would be fake and a hypocrite to people. All right, let's read one more. Then we're going to end this cheery topic. Holden spends a lot of time talking about Sally and the young man she was with in chapter 17. Actually, that one's not so good. How about this one? I know a person who has been dating someone for quite some time now. That's right, we used to be such good friends until he got his new girlfriend. We would constantly hang out on the weekends. As soon as he saw this girl, he put on a tough guy act. He would just start cussing and pushing around people just because he heard that this girl liked him. I would always tell him that he wasn't cool the way he was treating people. He wasn't cool the way he was treating people and how he was trying to change the way he dressed, spoke, and acted just so he could impress her. They finally started to go out, and he is phonier than ever. He's phony because he completely changed his style, attitude, likes, and dislikes just for this girl, but I can tell that deep down inside, he hates it. Well, whoever you are, that might just be wishful thinking. But yeah, you know, you hit the nail on the head. People become phonies when they feel that it's in their better interest, when there's a better clique to hang out with, when it's more to their future as they see it. And it's all throughout our society. It goes all the way up to the top. How we deal with countries, how we deal with our friends, how we deal with those people in our families, whatnot. So much more we could say on the subject. And yeah, you know, I wish I could have taken those phone calls because if they had come in earlier, I would have. Next week, maybe we can all agree the phone calls will come in at 6:30 or so. That would be cool. All right, we're out of time, I guess. So let's try and keep an eye out for when we're being hypocritical and when we're being true to our beliefs. Yeah, because lots of times it's hard to do one of those. Actually, it's easy to do one. It's easy to be phony. it's hard to be true to what you believe in, or something like that. Oh, if anybody could say it better than this person, I don't know who it is. This applies to so many people. Good night.
You're so hurt, why then don't you show it? You say you've lost your faith, but that's not where it's at. You have no faith to lose, and you know it. Behind my back, I used to be among the crowd you're in with. Do you take me for such a fool to think I'd make contact with one who tries to hide what it don't know to begin with? Surprised. You say, how are you? Good luck, but you don't mean it. When you know as well as me, you'd rather see me paralyzed. Why don't you just come out once and scream it? Heartbreaks you embrace. If I was a master thief, perhaps I'd rob them. And though I know you're dissatisfied with your position and your place, don't you understand it's not my problem? Stand inside my shoes, and just for that one moment, I could be you. Yes, I wish that for just one time you could stand inside my shoes. You'd know what a drag it is to see.
Yeah, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, and this is Lahamadou. I am here for the next 2 hours for Blues Day Tuesday, covering for Mr. Bill Darlin, and I hope I'm going to do you right. So grab something soft, bite down on something hard, because this is going to hurt.